Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Most High Show. I am your host today, James. I'm really, really excited about who we have lined up for today. One of my favorite authors. He's actually an author, a humorist, a blogger. He's out of Portland, Oregon. He's got one of my favorite books that I've read in recovery. It's called Now That You've Stopped Dying. His name is Sean Paul Mahoney. Say hi, Sean.
Hi, guys.
So y'all stick around. We're going to have a great conversation. We're gonna talk about substance abuse. We're going to talk about recovery, what you do in recovery. And he's got some awesome things to share, I'm sure. So stick around. This is The Most High Show.
Welcome to The Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and the 12 steps. Produced, hosted, and posted by people in recovery who've been given strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is The Most High Show.
Hey, Sean Paul Mahoney, thank you very much for joining us today.
Oh my gosh, James, I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Well, so I got to tell you, I'm a part of, on Facebook, I'm a part of a gay sober men's group. And at one point or another, it's a very interesting drama filled little group, I've got to say, but that's a whole nother, that's a whole nother show. But
that could be a whole other show.
Somebody had recommended your book on that page. And so,
that's so nice.
I know. I can't even remember who, because it was about 4 or 5 months ago. And so I did a little bit of research and I had it sent to my house. And I got to tell you that from the very first couple of pages, I really could not put it down because there was so much in there that I could relate to, not just as a crazy alcoholic and drug addict, but also as somebody who is in a relatively long-term recovery, but also as a gay man. And so it was just page after page I really related to. So I just want to say, before we even jump into the conversation, I just want to say thank you for putting this out, because it really spoke to me a whole lot. It's really helped me out the last couple of months.
Well, and thank you for saying that. And that was really like my mission statement in writing it. Like, for real, like, I wrote it for gay alcoholics. And then, like, if other people liked it, cool.
Yeah.
Every time a gay alcoholic likes it, I'm like, yay, it's doing its job. But I love hearing that.
Good. Talking about the book, then, how long have you been writing?
Oh my gosh! So I would say that, like, I was kind of like a born storyteller. Mm-hmm. I grew up in an alcoholic home, and like a lot of my coping mechanisms were like creating little stories or writing or drawing pictures. And I was obsessed with movies, and I was obsessed with reading. And I was obsessed with music. So anything to like get me out of myself, I would do. And I was like writing poems and doing that kind of stuff at like 7, 8 years old. And comics, all those things. And then wrote in high school. And then wrote in my semblance of a bullshit college career, which was like mainly just like doing ecstasy and going to raves. But I always have wrote, and I've had opportunities along the way, writing for different magazines and papers. But you know, in my active addiction, it was really hard to pull the trigger on any of that stuff. I had opportunities. I lived in LA. I had friends who were connected who kept telling me, please send us stuff. You're so talented. You're so funny. We know if you write stuff, it's got to be genius. And I could never freaking get it together. It's just my disease was so out of control, and my self-sabotage was so deep, and I had zero self-esteem. And
but I was you were, still but you were still writing this whole time, even through all your addiction, you were still writing.
I mean, not really. You know, it starts to fall apart. And I think you hear this from some creative people. It goes one way or the other. Like, if you're creative, like, and you drink it, like, woo, you can go crazy and you can like produce a bunch, for me, it absolutely thwarted the entire process. Like, I couldn't produce anything. So flash forward to getting sober in 2009, it was back on like gangbusters. I started publishing articles. I was doing web content. I was doing all these things. And so the book was really born out of essays, some of which were published on other places like thefix.com and afterparty.com. And so that's kind of where it was born from.
Yeah, thefix.com, for y'all who are listening, thefix.com is an absolute must for people who are in, for me, yeah, in recovery. Just some really great, some great essays, some really good insight into the whole world of recovery. So, you've published with them several times, correct?
Yep.
And in fact, I just read your latest publication about the going through a major breakup in recovery, and what is it? And again, so relatable. Although I haven't gone through a breakup in recovery, just the steps that you took to make sure that you were okay, to not pick up, to not use during the whole process, and how you utilized all the tools that you've learned along the way to make it through relatively unscathed through this breakup, very relatable to me. And I'm sure it spoke to a lot of people who are going through the same thing right now. It's like, how are we going to even survive without?
Well, I hope so. I mean, the thing is like, none of that is me, right? Like, I learned that all from other people. If it was up to me this summer when my marriage fell apart, I would have be on my sofa with like a box of wine and like a box of Twinkies and not move for several months. You know, like, that is my best coping mechanism for sure. So I needed other people. You know, I say without any drama that this has been the hardest year of my recovery. And I'm nearly 11 years sober. And, I didn't pick up no matter what, and it's because of having a program, having a spiritual life, having a rock solid support system. Yeah, it's all those things.
But before any of that came into your life, you went through some pretty heavy stuff out in LA, correct? You were partying pretty hard out there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think LA, like, is a 15-year microcosm of that. But, you know, I started using at 14 years old.
Where were you at the time?
I grew up in Denver, Colorado. And then I went to high school in Golden. Okay. And Golden, Colorado is where they make Coors beer.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And in the late 80s, it was pretty racist, gross place to be, particularly for a gay ass kid like myself. So I started drinking and using there, and my relationship with drugs and alcohol was out of control at 14. I had an arrest at age 15 for, and I make this joke a lot because it's true, I got arrested for stealing a bottle of peppermint schnapps, which you should be arrested for because peppermint schnapps is disgusting.
But we still drink it.
It's so gross. So I, point being, it was never normal. Like, I never had a normal relationship. And Right out of the gate. And then by 19, I had a moment, maybe like 3 to 4 months, where I wasn't drinking, I wasn't using. I wasn't even smoking cigarettes, and I started smoking cigarettes at 13.
And this was in college.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I remember thinking at 19, like, oh, this feels good. I should maybe do this all the time. Like, maybe I should not do anything anymore. That quickly passed. And I started doing a lot of drugs again. And by the time I was 20, I had used everything, including heroin. And so by 20, well, at 20, I went to Europe and there was an idea of like, well, maybe I could like kind of like figure out my life when I'm there. And of course I used drugs there. But then when I got back, in my mind, it was like drugs were the problem, right? Like it was, drugs were accessible because I wasn't 21 and I couldn't get alcohol. And so I just did drugs all the time. And so it was like, if I didn't do drugs, maybe I would be okay.
Oh, of course. It's the drugs. Right. Right.
Yeah. It was the drugs.
Yeah.
It wasn't me. I got home and then I turned 21 and it was just off to the races. Mm-hmm. So from 21 to 23, I drank my face off in Denver and also started using meth again. And sensing that something was up, my older brother who lived in LA in 1995 said, why don't you move out here? And I said, okay. And, a drug addict in 1995 moving to LA, what could possibly go wrong?
There was nothing. It's such a sleepy little town.
Yeah, exactly.
Not much going on out there.
No, I'm not going to find any trouble. So I immediately found my people. And to be honest, it was a lot of fun for a long time. You know, like I had friends who worked in clubs. I never paid to get in anywhere. I was on the list for places. I got free drinks at places. So it was a good time for a long time and I didn't work. It was this weird.
How are you supporting yourself, Sean Paul?
Who knows? To this day, James, I have no idea. I have no clue. I did that for so long and then like worked in restaurants and then worked in nightclubs and DJed for a while. And again, like more creative and big opportunities came my way and I would self-sabotage them or not show up for them or just like fuck them up. Like I DJed and promoted a night at a club that was popular, but like they essentially fired me because our staff bar tab was bigger than the money that they brought in. So that was kind of the deal for a really long time. So when somebody asked me to share at a meeting or whatever, like my story, like it's 22 freaking years of drug use and alcohol. And so, it's a long stretch from 14 to 36. I didn't get sober until 36. And so, it took a really long time for me to actually hit a bottom, even though I had hundreds of away.
It sounds like since the age of 14, you were just gradually making your way toward the bottom anyway. And then once you had the bright idea once you and your brother had the bright idea to move you out to LA, it sort of sped up the process quite a bit. And because everything is right there at your fingertips. And I mean, it's such a lifestyle and it's so readily accepted and almost expected. In certain circles in order to be part of any sort of social circle. Now, I kind of want to back up just a little bit, if it's okay.
Sure.
So looking back at your, you know, since you did start so young and partied and used and drank through your adolescence, what do you think was missing? Was it, because I can tell you for me, one of the things that I related was, and I hear a lot of this in recovery is I just did not have a sense of belonging to anything. And when I say that, I mean, I didn't fit in any circle. The jocks, the nerds, the God squad, the musicians, none of them. I didn't fit in, but once, I was introduced to drugs and alcohol. I learned to use that as a bridge into all of these different social circles. And, you know, I already had a penchant for addiction anyway. So,
Absolutely.
So it worked for me. And like it's been said many times, it was certainly a social lubricant because I was
very socially
stunted. So it just allowed me to open up and to be whoever you wanted me to be.
Exactly. And the thing about me is that, you know, I grew up in an alcoholic home, and there was a fair amount of trauma and stress since I came out of the womb. Mm-hmm. And so by the time I was 14 and took that drink, I freaking needed that drink. Yeah. Like, I was ready. I was so ready. And my whole thing, like, somebody asked me to sum it up in a sentence, like, why did you drink and use? And I said, the perfect thing that I can come up with is because, in general, I really don't like to feel my life. Like, I don't like to feel my life. I don't like to deal with things. I like to, like, be in complete oblivion or denial or fantasy land. Like, that's it. And, you know, as I alluded to in the beginning, like, as a kid, it was like toys and movies and stuff that did that. But once I found drugs and alcohol, like, that was a really good solution to not deal with anything. And so my, like, question as an artist and a sober person now and a writer is, like, how does a person who doesn't want to deal with anything get sober? And that's all they get to do is deal with everything.
Thing.
All the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, that's one of the things that I really related to with this book, which, by the way, the book here.
Yes, please. The book.
Now That You've Stopped Dying, Sean Paul Mahoney. One more plug there. One of the things that I related in the book is just it's clear with every essay that you put into this book, you are walking through something. You're feeling something. You're talking about something. You're exploring something. And lucky for us, you're putting that on paper and publishing that and allowing us to kind of be a part of that whole journey with you. That's why I was really, you know, the last article that you posted on The Fix really spoke to me, because it is very clear that you have learned to feel shit, even as wildly uncomfortable as it may be. And that is the biggest challenge, has been for me at least, the biggest challenge of staying clean and sober is feeling things. Because
let me ask you this, because this is like an ongoing theory I have in my mind, and I talk about this a lot with other sober gay alcoholics and addicts. Like, don't you feel, in general, as gay men, even the ones of us who are not addicted, we get to a place early on where we pretend like everything is okay, and we pretend like we're okay, and we act like everything is fine, and we pursue perfectionism to the point of, like, insanity. And we make everything look shiny on the outside, so we don't realize how fucking broken we are on the inside.
Well, for me, it's because we were in full-on survival mode.
Totally.
From an early age.
Absolutely. So I think that, like, so once you get sober, you have to 1,000% let that go, or you have no chance of hanging out. Because perfectionism and rigorous honesty, they don't exist on the same plane at all. You know, I think perfectionism is like a disease. Like, that is like the biggest lie you can tell to yourself. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was my thing with this book, is that, like, when I started writing the blog, You're the Inspiration, I had 2 years sober, and I had read a bunch of books like we do when we first get sober, right? We read everything. And I read a bunch of amazing memoirs, and they were all great. I loved all of them, but they all end at the point where the person gets sober.
No, and there's nothing beyond. That's like, it. How do you live your life now that you stop dying?
Yeah. And so that's it. And so my whole question was, well, now what? Like, now what do I do? And so that kind of became the thesis behind my writing.
So things got really awful for you out in LA.
Yes.
So tell me, was there one specific thing or maybe a series of things that really sparked your actual foray into recovery for real this time? Was it something you had flirted with for a little while and maybe gone in and out a little bit?
Well, I never like formally went in and out of the rooms, right?
Okay.
And so like when I first got sober, I was like really judgmental when I would see people relapse and stuff. I'm like, oh my God, those poor people. But then like it was pointed out to me, I had been relapsing on my own and like trying to quit on my own for 2 decades. So what happened in 2009 is that like I it was around this time of year, and I got evicted again. I'd been evicted like 5 times, and I kept getting evicted, and I could not figure out why. And I'm like, God, why won't my landlords just let me like do cocaine and drink tequila and not pay my rent? They're so mean. What's wrong with them? And so like, I could not figure this out. And so like, I eventually like, I was in a relationship with a person that I drank with like 7 nights a week, and it was super toxic. I like to call it the world's longest production of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. Like it was so freaking like nonstop, like drinking and fighting. That was all we did. And so it was super toxic. And that last time that I got evicted around this time of year in 2008 was it. And so I needed New Year's to kind of figure out my shit. And then I called my family on January 2nd. And that January 2nd, 2009 is my sobriety date. And I called my sister, who at the time had like 5 years, and her birthday, her belly button birthday, is on January 2nd. So I called her and I was like, hi, happy birthday. Oh my God. So listen, I'm totally screwed and I need help.
And what a sweet birthday gift.
I know, right? And she goes, okay, well, what's going on? And I think, well, I said, well, I think I've hit a bottom. And my sister is a smart ass like I am.
Of course.
And without missing a beat, she goes, okay, hit a bottom with what? The terrible relationship, how much you drink. I mean, yeah. Which one did you hit the bottom with? And I was like, yes and yes. So I reached out for help, which was really hard. Like, again, I don't think that's something that gay men are really good at, you know?
Not at all. Everything has to be fine. We have to look good. We have to sound good. Exactly. Everything has to be perfect because we're all judging each other so much.
And a lot of us, like, had to be self-reliant. And so when you're self-reliant, asking for help is like, ugh. Mm-hmm. So I did it. You know, my dad was sober, is still sober. So I talked to my parents too. It was really hard. But I'm not one of those people that like could stay in my current living situation or like stay at my job.
Right.
My job, I drank at my job. My busboy at the restaurant where I worked at was also my coke dealer. Like, I had to leave my job. I had to leave that relationship with the person that I drank with. So I moved out of Silver Lake and I moved to the beach. And all I did was take classes at Santa Monica College and go to meetings every single day.
So you cleaned your slate completely. Did
I had to.
What sort of changes did you make to your social circle?
I mean, everything. I made like a scorched earth, like Daenerys. Like, I mean, I burnt all of the shit down, like, because I had to, because what I was doing was not working. So it was super lonely and hard, but I knew fundamentally it was the only way that I would stay alive.
And you did. And so those first few months, what were they like for you?
You know, the first few months were weird, but they were okay. I think it was like around 5-6 months when I like got into my place near the beach and all that, like it, where stuff really started to get real. I really started to go to meetings. I got a sponsor. Life got really, it was hard, but I had a lot of support. I met like my best friend in the program who, you know, his birthday is January 12th. So we're like, we've talked or texted every day for over 10 years. And so it was rough and like, you know, really great though. And then around 7 months, I was feeling really weird. And I was sitting in the park with my best friend and I said, I feel like I need to go to a doctor. And he's like, well, go to a doctor. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm afraid. I don't want to go to a doctor. I'm a freaking addict. I haven't been to a doctor in forever. And he's like, go to a doctor. And so I said, yeah, but like, what if like the worst thing happens if I go?
And the worst thing being?
Anything. I mean, anything. Yeah. Like, what if I found out information that I don't want to hear? And he's like, yeah, but okay, so what if it does? You're going to be okay. I said, all right, fine, I'm going to go. So I went, I got the test done. And by test, I mean like all my like STD tests, all of that stuff too. I also was experiencing like I had a cyst. And so that also like prompted the doctor visit too. And so they, I got my test done and then about a week later, I got a call and I went into the doctor's and she told me that I was HIV positive and I had 7 months sober. And I remember leaving that clinic and I remember thinking, I should really get drunk right now.
Yeah. If there ever was an excuse.
Yeah. And I honestly thought, James, that like people would understand. Like if I relapsed, people would be like, we get it. Yeah. Not a big deal.
Of course.
And I called my sister right away and she was like, well, what you're going to do is you're not going to pick up and you're going to go home. And then I called my sponsor and he was like, don't go to a meeting. And I said, what? Are you serious? Don't go to a meeting? He's like, don't go to a meeting. Like, stay home. And he gave me permission to like cry and lay on my floor. And no one had ever done that for me. And no one had ever said, you can be broken right now. And it was huge. It was huge. And then the process after that was people just took care of me. People brought me food. People took me to meetings and I was okay. And then also bigger than that, sober gay alcoholics in the rooms in Santa Monica who were also positive threw all these resources at me and had all these ideas for me.
And, so it was essentially another coming out for you, correct?
Exactly. Exactly. And the thing is that like, and you touched on this in the beginning that like, you know, LA had, it has all the stuff as far as like, it's super accessible, like drugs and alcohol. But the awesome flip side of that is that recovery there is so rock and roll.
I've heard it's badass out there.
Oh my God. There's like 30,000 meetings a week and you feel so supported in every single room that you're in. And it was because of those rooms and the people that I didn't relapse and why I stayed. And, yeah, so it was like the worst possible thing to happen in early recovery, but the best too.
So you started writing and you started writing on a regular basis at this point. And this is when you started publishing on a regular basis as well.
No, I didn't really start like publishing until after I got a year.
Okay.
Yeah. And then like around 2 years is when I started blogging.
And so now it's a full on career for you, correct?
It is. That's awesome. But I also, yeah. And I also work in the field of recovery too. I work as a recovery mentor at a hospital here in Oregon on an addiction medicine team.
That's amazing. And,
I love it so much.
Who would? It's amazing. What a transformation. So proud of you, Sean Paul.
I love it so much.
So what do you have coming up on the horizon? What are you working on right now? I'll tell you what, if somebody wants to read some of your stuff on a regular basis, once they get through your book, which they're anything like me, they're going to get through it in a day or so. So after that, then where are they going to go to see more of your work?
Well, Medium.com. I'm on Medium.com. I publish there frequently. And then my own website, Seanalogs.com.
Seanalogs?
Okay. And that has stuff of mine on there as well. I'm working on like two more collections. I have, when we were talking the other day, I was like, you asked me this question. And I said, well, yeah, I'm working on another collection, but it's going to be gayer. You're like, I don't even know how that's humanly possible.
Yeah, that's a pretty gay book, this one.
But yeah, but I took that as a challenge. No, because again, I really feel like, and this is serious to me, and a life's work sort of mission statement thing for me. You know, if you look at the very real numbers from 2017, about the higher rate of addiction, mental health and suicide among gay men as opposed to their straight counterparts. It is staggering.
It's staggering.
It is heartbreaking. And it's something I'm really committed to because I care about our people. And I feel also like it's still something our community doesn't talk about. And so so I have another book coming out about that. And then, you know, a lot of my work is really based in pop culture. And I have a mini book coming out in May that's all essays inspired by Stevie Nicks. And which a friend of mine who is phenomenal, a queer artist, doing the cover for. So I have that coming out. And then I have my own podcast called Queer Mental Condition, which is a podcast just for LGBTQIA folks in recovery, hosted with me and the fantastic comedian Marita De Leon. And so
she is fantastic. Love her.
Oh my God, she's amazing. And so that's available on Spotify, iTunes, and Stitcher, and all kinds of other places too.
That's awesome, Sean Paul. It sounds like you have a lot left to say, a lot to put out. I know that for what I'm looking forward to reading it, hearing it, all the things that you have coming out in the future. Again, the book that you have right now is called Now That You've Stopped Dying. It is a collection of great essays. It's a really easy read. Just take it. You can take it one essay at a time. But I've spent the last half hour with humorist, writer, author, blogger, gay, alcoholic, drug addict, Sean Paul Mahoney. It has really been a great conversation. And I'm looking forward to hopefully having you on sometime in the near future once you start producing some other things. And I, for one, will be devouring whatever you put out there. And I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to be with us here on the Most High Show.
Thank you so much, James.
And we will see all of you guys really soon. If you have any questions, if you want to contact us here at The Most High Show, just go to contact@themosthighshow.com. We will see you later. Thank you very much for listening. Everybody have a good day. Bye. Bye, Sean Paul.
Bye.